Go loud.
What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your whip in the snow. Tell your body a pain. Walk it hard and low. When you finish that.
The hip knocker.
Episode 178 of the Talking Bollocks podcast, brought to you by Go Loud. It's me, COB.
It's me, Tardy Flower.
And today we're joined by...
It's Tony O'Neill.
Tony, how are you?
I'm good, thank you.
Tony, I like the t-shirt.
Thank you very much.
What's it saying?
That, boys get sad too.
Why are you wearing that?
So today, Tardy kicks us off with Men's Mental Health Awareness Week. And this morning was part of a sort of talk, just to talk about bridging the gap, the correlation in regular gym use and just keeping your head straight.
Class.
Yeah, it's an aspect that I don't think people lean into enough, Tony. Like the software looks after the hardware and the hardware looks after the software in your body. That's the way I operate. And I always say to Terry, Terry's recently gone into the gym, but I'm flat, say over the last, 15 or so months, I'm flat. I go 5 days a week, non-negotiable.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I mean... People say, oh, like, you're really busy in the gym. You're never missing on. It's for me head. See, if there's one day that I don't go, I'm sitting in the house and I'm pulling my hair out and I'm like, I should have just fucking went to the gym.
Yeah, I often say that most people join the gym to lose a bit of weight, but they keep going back to keep their head straight.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever you're not going to the gym, you can find yourself reacting
to
stuff. And like a point that I made earlier is that a 3 out of 10 issue becomes a 4 out of 10, becomes a 5 out of 10. And then when it reaches 8 out of 10 and you react to it, people are like, they take a step back and go, whoa. Bit of an overreaction that, wasn't it?
Mm.
But it's just brewed and it's built up. Whereas if you go to the gym, you blow off steam.
Yeah.
Just takes your head out of it. And that 3 out of 10 becomes 2 out of 10. It's a much easier conversation to have. Or it becomes a 0 out of 10. And you just get on with it. You just like let it go.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm a big fan of consistent gym use or exercise in general and keeping the head straight.
Yeah. And it's, as you said, it's Men's Mental Health Awareness Week. I think June is technically the awareness month, isn't it?
I think so. Look, a lot of the days are gimmicky, aren't they? Like, we'll call a spade here. But if this here gives us an opportunity to highlight it or just that person to hear somebody talking about it and the light bulb goes off thinking, do you know what? I will have that chat with somebody, or maybe we'll start walking outside, or I'll join a gym. You know, they'll make a positive change or like a step in the right direction. Then it's a worthy conversation to have.
Yeah, it is, definitely.
But it's whenever you hear something like, I don't know, Pink Socks Day, National Pink Socks Day. It's like a lot of crap, isn't it?
Yeah. Now, the one thing, because someone actually reached out to me there before the weekend and they were like, what advice would you have? And I think to break down the stigma, the thing that people are saying is it's okay not to be okay. But I think even that saying now has become stigmatized, because what does that actually mean? What action can you take from that? And I'm like, right, I don't feel good now. Okay, now what?
Yeah.
I've addressed that, I don't feel good, I'm acknowledging it. Now what? What do I do? And we know what the resources are like out there. This person in particular told me that they reached out for help, and the service they reached out, they responded that, oh, there's an 8-week waiting list.
Whoa.
And I was like, Jesus Christ, like, where do you go from here? No wonder you're fucking getting onto me. But as you said, little kind of changes. Now, it may not change overnight, but little kind of positive things, like what's your diet, what's your exercise routine, are you sessioning, as in like are you drinking, taking drugs or whatever, are you being mindful of yourself, are you checking yourself? You know, personally, I check myself, so I know if I'm having a bad day, I can be like, look, it's a bad day, I've had a bad day, tomorrow's a new day, we go again, it's not a bad life. And then what that also does for me then is I know I can have another bad day somewhere down the road, and it's just another bad day. You get on with it then, you know how to deal with it. It's not necessarily a new trajectory in your life. I'm not on this bad road. I'm just having a bad moment in this time. That was just my take on it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Like, to bring that, like, an analogy into that, it's like a surfer. Sometimes the waves are going to be crap. Sometimes they're going to be really good. Sometimes the conditions just aren't there. And, you know, if you go to the gym, it's just giving you that opportunity to have more good days than bad days. Because if you're going to the gym, it helps you manage the bad days. And sure, when the good days are there, you know, you have a chance to enjoy it anyway. But that's a great point, Calvin, that you made. Like Jordan Peterson, you're familiar with him?
Yeah.
So he's got a great point of view on it. I know he's not everybody's flavour, but I like how he like phrases this, because it's like it's actionable. If somebody comes to you and their head's up their backside for too many days in a row, and you tell them, oh, it's okay, I know it's okay not to be okay, but you're okay, then their head will go like even deeper in that trajectory. Like, give them a pathway. Like, right, okay, there's something wrong. What's the next step?
Yeah.
You know, we'll call this person Bill just for easy reference here. So Bill, when was the last time you exercised or went for a walk? Oh, I'm not really in the mood. You know, if you can like delve into a conversation and try and get like deeper into the layers, I don't know. But don't want to go off on a tangent here. I'm here to talk about health and wellbeing and nutrition. I suppose technically it is health.
Yeah.
But you get my point there. It's like if somebody comes to you and they see there's validity in having that conversation with you, that there's someone who like they feel that you can help, try and offer help, you know, try and like make sure that they feel heard, that listen to, try and understand, meet them where they are at. I quite often find that it's not what you're actually saying, it's how you say it. So if somebody comes to me and they're not going to the gym at all and I'm like, you're a mess, look at the state of you, when's the last time you went to the gym? It's going to like propel them further away from making that change. Whereas if a wee bit softer approach, read the situation and say, when's the last time you got out for a walk? Mm. Oh yeah, it's a good idea. You know, it's when the summertime now, good weather, stick earphones in, download a podcast. There's this one called Talking Bollocks. That it's going to be my new favourite. You know, just go and clear the head and take your away from scrolling Instagram and judging yourself against other people or whatever like the issues are that are building up in your head.
Definitely.
I want to say thanks as well. You brought us in a present. It's the first present we've actually gotten in a long time, boys, isn't it?
I love when Terry does this because put pressure on future guests to bring in presents.
100%. Mate, it's my birthday in October. See, from like mid-July, I'll start ramping up. Like, tense about it.
Start reminding people.
Yeah. Absolutely. Marks and Spencer's vouchers or hotel chocolate. Yeah. You know, anything else, just keep it.
Just telling people your shoe size and all the conversations. Like, so is knowing, just in case you were wondering. Like,
But the stock is fresh, that the stock is that's on his feet. What have you got in them, Tony?
It says bollocks.
And what way is it spelled there?
B-A, I have to look down, B-A-L-L-I-X. The northern way to say it.
Yeah.
Up towards the north. That's the way we say it. I think bollocks is like, it's a wee bit, I don't know, snobby, isn't it? Bollocks.
You saying we're posh?
No, definitely not. Maybe the producer. Made the name up.
Stop, right. Tony, what we do with every guest, Take us back to the start. Tell us where you're from. What was life like growing up for you?
I'm from Belfast. Specifically North Belfast, born in 1983, so I saw a first year of troubles. And I know it's a bit of a cliche for someone born in the 80s from Belfast to talk about the troubles. There's a bit of a stigma that comes with the territory and the era, but it was interesting times growing up. We were a bit restrictive, we were limited.
Can I just say, Tony, it's a bit significant. Like, it's not like a thing where you're like, oh, we're talking about something stupid. It's the fucking troubles, like, so.
And if anything hasn't been spoken about or addressed enough.
For us, maybe.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Numbers not there that they've lost more people to suicide than they actually did in the troubles themselves?
Yeah,
and there is a correlation there, I suppose, the ripple effect from, like, the generation before and, you know, mentally how that was, like, transpired through into the generation coming afterwards. And look, I don't know, I try to be an optimist and I try to like blanket away, but at the same time, like, you are right, and it's probably the wrong word I used for it, probably because I used up all the good talk
at the start. Yeah,
I bet it. Now I'm thinking, what else can I say here to make it differently? But look, it was interesting. I did see like going to watch the rats was like where people are trying to kill each other. That was normal as a kid growing up. Like, you and your friends were like, well, we'll go down and watch the rats. And yeah, saw some crazy stuff. Early memories in Belfast, like Royal Avenue. So, did I get that right? O'Connell Street?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I always get Connolly Station and O'Connell Street mixed up. So, like, it's like, what would you call that? Sort of like a fence, like a barricade put up either side of it. And you had to go through, so your mum's handbag would have been checked and you would have been patted down and stuff to make sure that there was nothing crazy going to go on. So, yeah, I suppose now whenever I reflect on that, it wasn't regular times to be playing football on the street. And there's a Brit down on one knee with a loaded rifle. I'm kind of observing what you're doing and looking through the lens of their gun just to see if there's anything out there. And yeah, crazy times.
That's, like I said, that's significant. It's completely abnormal. Like, it's not what kids usually have to go through or see when they're growing up. So I think it's important to talk about, although there's probably a part of you that's probably like, well, that's just how it was, or...
Yeah, yeah, like, it was just regular. It was an everyday occurrence thing, and, like, it's interesting. So, I grew up in the New Lodge, part of North Belfast, very close to Tigers Bay, very close to Crumlin Road, Shankill Road. Like, Johnny Adair was probably about 400 yards. He lived at, but just know who he is. So he was like a big UVF, maybe, I don't know, like leader. But he didn't live too far from where we lived, and even though I'm Catholic and we were growing up in a nationalist area, he's like a leader of the other side, and he's not that far away. So, yeah, North Belfast is very divided. Yeah, I have scars on my head just for being Catholic, and that's just the way it is. I'm not crying about it, or for us, it was just life. And, yeah, to think back and talking about suicide and the ripple effect with that, like, there is a lot of it. In Belfast, North and West Belfast particularly, the stats are frightening. In fact, a friend and I, we used to take a kids' football team from under 11 up until 16, 17. I think he's dead only a year after. I was too busy with work. But I think five of the kids have committed suicide. Jeez. Of just that one crop. And there was one actually recently who tried to do it and failed in his attempt. And then my friend, who was the manager with me, reached out to me, told me the crack. So I reached out to him, how was things? He explained the story, everything just went tits up, lost his job, all of that. What do you do? I'm in the chefing, hospitality. It's like, great, I have a few friends who own restaurants. So I was able to connect the dots very quickly. And I actually drove past him last week, and he looked in good spirits, looked in good order. Haven't spoken to him in a while. So I'm hoping he was able to go on with that. But yeah, my point there is that, like, just through losing the job and one or two other things going on, you think, oh, well, that's it.
Yeah, you're on this slope. You're going down. You can't stop.
There's no handbrake.
Yeah.
Like, just over something like that. So
what age did you start to realise that it wasn't normal, the kind of childhood and growing up and seeing this?
Honestly?
Yeah.
When I lived in Australia.
And how long ago was that then? What age were you?
2000 and we moved away, so it was 29, 30. It's just whenever you were talking about upbringing and childhood and you're telling these stories, and people are like, full of shit, you're making that up. But no, like, used to wake up with plastic bullets in our backyard, like shells and plastic bullets there.
And is that just from the realisation just came around from talking about your childhood to people who wouldn't be familiar with Northern Ireland or North Belfast?
Yeah, just like shooting the breeze. So tell me about your upbringing. You're chatting around, they're like, yeah, like, really? It's like, yeah, is that not normal? No, I don't think so. We were feeding the kangaroos and we're fucking dodging plastic bullets. It's like, so know that whole theory that if you take off from London and you shift the pattern 1 degree, if you head off from New York and you shift it 1 degree, you end up in Boston. It's something like that, no, just like the trajectory and how you do it. I always remember I was around 13, 14, and this was a bit of a moment for me now that we're delving into this conversation. My best friend in primary school rode off my dad's car because he was joyriding, went into it, rattled into it, and he was arrested and all that there. But I always remember standing there at the front door and looked out. And what happened was, when we left primary school, we kind of just went off on different routes. I continued to play football. My friend group started to go to a different area because of the football club I was playing for and all of that. And he just fill them with wee bastards, as I would call them, and just like things, stealing cars and joyriding and whatever else was just normal for him. Yeah. For me, that was very abnormal. So I can remember then that was a significant point, because that's something that sticks with me. I think I said out loud when we were outside there that I have plans to start a charity. Mm. It's going to be the Fat Project, and because like I've helped people lose 10 stone and all that before, so I would kind of be connected with the guy who helps people lose weight. But it's like a foundation for active teens, and what we want to do is liaise with school teachers, youth leaders, sports club mentors, that for kids who are growing up but the parents can't keep up with the new football boots or whatever for their size and the apparel, to like help them continue staying in sports, then we can help like fund that, facilitate it.
Unbelievable. Yeah.
That's brilliant. Tony, you mentioned there that, so you've been known as the fellow who helps people lose weight, and you kind of touched on at the start that you're all about health and wellness and nutrition. What is your actual role and title?
It's changed so much over the years. So I'm doing this now 20 years. And so like, even though I have a higher education in nutrition, I have a very unorthodox like approach to how I studied. I didn't even get enough GCSEs to get into sixth year. And the school that I was in was just starting A-levels. And I think because I had potential that I wasn't daft. And I think I got four, three GCSEs, four GCSEs, and you need a five certain grades to get in, and I didn't do that. So then get into sixth year and all of that, and then I decided to leave. Just always remember, it's funny, I was listening to your podcast earlier about the school system, and it brought me to this point there. I remember trying to sneak onto the bus, and one of the teachers pulled me inside by the throat up. Big guy, hand by the throat, and he told me he was one of the biggest fuck-ups he's seen in years. And then he just threw me away like a rag doll, and I got back on the bus with my tail between my legs. And then it got me thinking, like, why did he not pull me to the side? Maybe communicate a wee bit differently.
Yeah, encourage
4 years previous and say, here, I see the path you're going down. You're going to be like a fuck up here. Like, why not do something about it? Is there anything that we can help you with? Whatever. And again, it's just some of the things that you were saying that made me like think like that and provoke that thought. But yeah, so like when it comes to who I am and what I do, everything I've done as a mature student. So I can talk my way into things. As a 19-year-old, I wasn't old enough to get onto this course. I had to be 21 over to be a mature student. So I went to this college to do 1 year of A-levels. But it would have been enough to gain me access into university to become, to study to be a PE teacher. Because I liked sports and I liked, like, I'm trying to help them, show them ways. I felt like leadership kind of came naturally. When I read the books, I'm like, it's common sense, no? Like, just the principles behind it. So I went into that, and then my dad took ill. He had cancer, head up backside. And then whenever he passed, I didn't go to uni, just dropped out and all that. So I had to kind of come back around. Year 18 months, bummed about jobs. I had a job in Parcel Force, like DPD, you know, the big lorries.
Yeah.
And I crashed the van 3 times in 3 days. And that Wednesday morning, whenever I crashed it in the depot, the guy was already walking over to me, but I got out of it and handed him the keys. I said, don't think this job is for me. He's like, you think? So then walked on, but then I saw a thing coming about, like about becoming a fitness instructor. I was like, right, can't be a PE teacher, but that appeals to me. So then started doing that, get into the way of it, got a job in a gym, and the rest is just history. Start working with people, finding out their pain points. How do I eat food to lose weight? How do I eat food to fuel, get more energy, get more out of the gym? How do I move better? So I did a postgrad in like biomechanics, how the human body moves, like different patterns, how to offset injury risk. And the rest has just like found itself that way. So all education has just been from a more mature point of view. So education, it kind of came like back around where I do what I do because of the people. And then I was like, right, I have to work out what they need rather than me, oh, this is my career path and this is what I want to do. So I went through periods of being the motivator to, I worked a little bit with the BBC and like local Z-list celebrities. Stephen Nolan, do you know who he is? No. So Stephen Nolan's like a big broadcaster in, quite controversial, in Northern Ireland. Helped him lose weight, that opened up pathways and different things. As I mentioned, there are a couple of TV shows. And then from there, we moved away to Australia. I used nutrition a little bit in Australia. I liked it. We came back to open up the restaurant. We opened up a restaurant. It's like the idea of it was a healthy food restaurant. So all the food, single food ingredients. Try and get as creative as possible and inspire as many people as possible to eat better food. We very quickly realised that hospitality is not the pathway to do that because people just love to complain. And yeah, it's hard work, hospitality. Mm-hmm. I'm sure that anybody who's listening to this who works in it or is in an ownership capacity, because it is brutal. And we were doing a night market, and a friend approached me, a professional boxing coach, and says, have this kid coming through, Lewis Crocker. Lewis Crocker coming through. Can you help him make a weight? He's the real deal. He showed me this video of the second fastest amateur knockout in history, only behind Mike Tyson. It's like 9 seconds. Stops, very heavy-handed kid. Great boxer too, like has the world at his feet. And so, yeah, I started to work with Lewis. Kid from just down the road, Sandy Rowe. We talked about, I'm a big advocate of trying to like open up doorways and pathways for people who had a similar upbringing to myself, that if I can help facilitate them getting ahead that wee bit quicker, then I'll do whatever I can. And yeah, that went through like a patch there where restaurateur and more sports nutrition, worked with athletes more and enjoyed that spell. Lockdown kicked in, we closed the restaurant and we did more online. A company got in touch with us, asked could we help out corporate wellness standpoint. So now that's mostly what we're doing. Corporate wellness, where we've got psychologists, yoga teachers, Pilates instructors, gym instructors, just try and tattle together to work with companies and try and like make the staff less stressed and like just manage life stressors that wee bit better.
Yeah. So there's two key points that you mentioned, Tony, and one of them is the area that you're from, the working class area. You didn't grow up with a lot, as we talked about earlier on. And the second thing that you just mentioned a minute ago was your dad doing. Does either of them things correlate with what you do today?
So with my dad passing, so my dad died in his 40s and his dad died in his 40s. And like, I'm now 40. Remember you were saying earlier, I look really good for 40. So it does play on your mind. And my missus is the eternal optimist and just like, you do everything possible to do it. But there's still a little itch there thinking that...
Do you think it's like a rite of passage? Like it's a destiny?
Maybe not as like dire as that. But yeah. It does like... So at the moment, recently I've got had a scan on my left testicle because there's like a pain and it's actually quite painful now. I've got osteitis pubis, I think. It's a horrible injury, front of the pelvis, and the pain just, referral goes onward. So whenever that first happened, I was like, oh, I've got testicular cancer. Oh, I'm dead next week. Who will I ring? You know, things go through your head, snowball, and you just try and do what you can to like try not to think like that and eat good food and prioritize sleep and make sure you exercise, make sure you socialize. Make sure that you're managing stress, and my head can't, like, it just can't have a ripple effect. You know, sometimes I'll take something and just create an issue out of nothing, and then my missiles like, how did you get that conclusion? It's like, don't know. Tony Extreme, just ripple and it goes off. So in terms of like my own health and well-being, is that what you were mentioning? Yeah, like I'm quite fussy. I'm very grateful that I've always been involved in sport, like GAA, soccer, football, what do you guys call it? Soccer?
Football.
Boxed a little bit, cross country. So like, I just like to be active and stay with it. And I feel like when I'm active, it's my chance to feel my best. Mm-hmm. There was a quote from a guy I like, and it's like, you don't have to feel good to get going. You have to get going, give yourself a chance of feeling good.
Mm-hmm.
And whenever I'm in a funk or like my head's a wee bit melted, I'm like, right, okay, just get out and move. Just don't even put yourself under pressure. But exactly what you're going to do, just go and move. And if my body is in bits from a big training session, like I cycled there at the weekend, 100K, told you, 2 weeks into it, and a friend texts in, do you want to do 100 kilometres, 60-odd miles? Yeah, I'm your man. But then, like, my Wilbert still numb. Like, everything's still a bit, like,
sorry,
uncomfortable. Yeah, I thought the Wilbert would have got a bit of a LOL of it here.
The listeners might.
Sorry, I have to bring it back up. So, yeah, look, does it frame me? Is it shaping who I'm becoming now? Because I'm working more with, like, CEOs of companies who now get it. And they've enjoyed their nights out and their holidays, whatever. They just want to like prolong what they're doing. They want to see their kids grow old. They want to see their kids grow. They want to have as much energy and resources possible for getting the most out of themselves and their employees and growing their company. So, yeah, I suppose it leans into that and it's shaping who I'm becoming as a person who's creating a way to pay their bills. I don't know. A profession, like slightly altering. So, yeah, I have many different hats. On it, like earlier today, whenever we're doing the wellness chat, the men's mental health awareness in the gym, after that I stayed on and put a group through a workout because I love that environment. You know, I've tried to step away from it, but I feel like it validates me. Like in that moment I can see people who are a bit sluggish, grumpy, just a wee bit less energy, and then 40-45 minutes later they're buzzing, they're giving you validation, they're feeling good, they're making you feel good, and it was just a really worthwhile 45 minutes. So I try and stay like on the gym floor a little bit. My missus does more of the coaching now in that setting, but yeah, like that makes me feel good. And then the other point that you made, I don't know, can you give me more, like can you elaborate a bit more like about where I'm from and how it shapes me?
Just in terms, because you were mentioning earlier on about your friend was kind of started taking the wrong road and going out robbing cars and things like that, and seeing you now, you're into health and wellness, and if I'm correct, I don't think you've ever really went down the road of drink and drugs and robbing cars. And
at a few, no.
It seems like it can go either way, like where you're from, and similar to where we're from, there's like two paths really.
Yeah.
Down this road and down this road, and you took the road of health and wellness.
Yeah, it's like, so like, tapping back into mental health, I suppose this is a podcast about health, and your brain's just as important, isn't it? Commodity. like, so mental health, I don't really understand what mental health means. So the way I try and like term is that if someone's in a pickle and they need sort of advice, encouragement, and an ear to listen, a mental illness, where there's like manic depression and bipolar and all the other things there. And it's like, it becomes blurry and it gives people an opportunity to, if they are like in a bit of a pickle, they just like umbrella themselves and, oh, it's my mental health. And like, that's not right or wrong way to look upon it, but it may just get in the way of taking that first step to thinking, here, how can I turn this day around? How can I turn this week around? How can I turn this month around? Because like, Twitter's mustard for it. Someone will put a big post up about their mental health and they get loads of likes and loads of encouragement. And then 2 weeks later, you'll see them on a Wednesday at lunchtime with a picture of a pint saying, it's 5 p.m. somewhere, LOL. I'm thinking like, there's commonality there of like those behaviours that may not be the best choice if your head was fried 2 weeks ago to be like painting. Mm. But yeah, so like, back to that, it's just like, it's a fine line, isn't it? And the more you can stay on the right side of the fine line, the less likely you're going to be like pulled back into that side of like society that we grew up in.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Tony, we chatted over the weekend in preparation for this, and as you said, you have many hats, so you've a lot of knowledge, and you said you went down the unconventional route. And when we were chatting outside, you said that you see things like studies and people ask you, oh, do you want to give a talk about that? And you're like, no, because I don't agree with this, that and the other. So you're constantly deconstructing things and breaking it down. So this is the reason why we wanted you on, because we think there's a lot of nutritional facts and lifestyle facts that people aren't aware of or are misconceptions. So we've sent over a few pointers, and we're just looking for you to go through them with us.
Okay,
so,
yeah.
The first one, and it was mad because I rang Terence last night. Terence was like, the first thing I want to talk about was the first thing I asked you to talk about, which is fasting. So we've both tried our hand at fasting, but I think it was more of like a challenge and stubbornness,
yeah,
as opposed to a health perspective.
Like,
yeah, yeah. Mm. So I think we've both done 24-hour ones, but like, with no preparation, no end goal, nothing in sight of benefit. We just wanted to see, could we not eat for 24 hours? But I've done more research into this, and I was told in preparation what you should be going through with your body to get ready for the fast. And then when you're finishing the fast, the first thing you should consume in order for your body to take most benefit from it. Whereas I think when we did it, we were just like, I have an in 24 hours, get as many calories into your body as possible. Yeah, he went to garlic kebab.
I've eaten 24 hours, I need 4,000 calories.
Yeah, essentially, that's what we're looking at. But can you give us a few facts about fasting and any...
So give me context. So let's, because there'll be somebody listening to this going through right now what you guys are going through. What prompted this?
I did it on a whim, but an impulsive decision. Like my brother is like into all health and stuff like that. He's a PT himself, he's in the army, and he was looking into fasting and a 24-hour fast or a 48-hour fast.
Yeah.
He said it to me, let's just say this, a Thursday evening at 6 o'clock, and said, from Friday morning, 8 a.m, I'm fasting for 24 hours or 48 hours. And I just said, fuck it, when I wake up in the morning, I'll do it with you. We'll just spend the day together and we'll see what happens. Yeah. So there was no like health benefits in mind or that. And I was just doing it because he was doing it. I just wanted to do it for the crack.
So whenever I lived in Australia, it was like really hot topic then. Like, it was starting to emerge. And I remember being asked the question a lot about it. So then I started to like research more into it. And I've tried my own fast. I've done 3-day fasts and things like that. And it's not for me. Just the way I'm wired as a human being, it makes me really anxious, it makes me really cranky, really like irritable. I can't sleep, so I don't really fast. I'm naturally very lean, hard enough as it is to keep muscle mass on. So the last thing I want to do is avoid a window where I could like bring food on board to help any sort of catabolism, where the body like slowly breaks down muscle tissue because there's no substrate, there's no food in your system. So let's bring a couple of scenarios into it. So would a diabetic do well with fasting? Maybe. Because like their pancreas is under pressure to produce enough insulin to make their cells, try to make their cells more sensitive to the blood glucose in their body. So if they kind of like settle down a little bit, maybe that will help. I don't know. It's just hypothetical, firing things out. Who would benefit from someone who just wants a little challenge, wants to build a little bit of mental fortitude and resilience? Because we do live in Western society, we live in abundance, and we have like There's chippies and fast food everywhere. You know, you can go into Marks and Spencer's and spend, I don't know, 150, 2 quid on 4 or 5 cookies, 2,000 calories, just like that. And you know yourself, you inhale those. Like, we're just, we've got so much at our disposal. So building that fortitude to say, no, I'm going to go through this period to not eat food, perhaps. A big thing from, like, the literature point of view is autophagy.
Or yeah, I'm not sure how to pronounce that. I call it anaphagy.
Yeah. Autophagy, Americans, where some people pronounce it, and then autophagy.
Yeah.
And autophagy, so I like analogies to help people understand. So autophagy is something that, so if you can imagine builders come into the studio and they were going to, like, fix things up, but they needed that ceiling patched up, and they needed, not that there's not a hole in the ceiling, by the way, it's actually really nice in here. I feel like I'm on Graham Norton, it's that nice. It looks really good. But say there's a hole there, but there's a budget, so you want to be as economical as possible. Well, then the builder will go around and look for, like, wood that's not going to be used, that likely get dumped, thrown out. So then they'll, like, repurpose it. And that's just a good way to describe autophagy. So rather than cells dividing and subdividing and subdividing and subdividing, it's a chance to, like, fix the cell within. In theory, like, I'm broadly speaking, there's going to be somebody so much smarter than me listening to this going, yeah, you're full of balls, and they'll go into, like, the molecular processes behind it. But to roughly speak, that's kind of the premise behind it.
What do you think is the ideal period then for a fast? Because, do you know, I remember it's ringing a bell in my head now. This all stemmed from, it was like a big trend on Twitter, I remember, and then Dana White did a four-day fast or something like that.
Oh, Gary Brecka.
And I was like, surely that can't be beneficial for you.
Is this just recently, like in the last 6 months or so?
Yeah.
So there's a guy, Gary Brecka, and he's just a big, like,
is this Dana's trainer?
Charlatan.
Yeah, it's his trainer,
just, yeah. Yeah, a lot of balls. Just to sensationalise stuff and just to sell products. But see all the stuff that makes you feel good and makes you feel your best? It is boring. There is nothing sexy about it. It's be hydrated, prioritise sleep, lift weights, try and get your heart rate up, socialise, try to manage stress. Like, people don't want that. Oh, yeah, I've heard all that before, but what about that pill? Or what about that detox? Or what about that cold plunge? Or what about that infrared sauna? Yes, that's all things that do have their place, but you're stepping over, like, euros to get cents.
Yeah.
See what I did there? Not pounds and pennies.
Localised. He's localised.
I'm switched on, lads. So what is ideal? So let's use me for context here. It fried my brain. Like, it really wound me up. I had no energy. I became a boar bag. I told everybody I was fasting. No, but, like, if you do CrossFit or you're vegan, you're going to tell everybody about it. I was about telling everybody I'm a faster. Oh, I'm racked, I'm fasting. It wasn't for me. So regardless whatever deep biomolecular process is taking place to make me reverse aging and become even younger, better looking, like, it's not worth it. It wasn't worth it. It fried my brain. And my missus even says, oh, it's like 10:30, 11:15. Why have you not had breakfast? Oh, yeah, you're right. And she's just, like, having hints to say, like, have food. I don't want you to be cranky here. Mm. Like, coming up soon. And, like, it's a good question. And I don't know. There's a guy, Bran Johnson, I think that's his name. Have you heard of this guy? So he's trying to reverse aging. He's trying to be the first person to live, like, he's trying to live to 200.
Is this your man who takes his son's blood?
Yes. So he's
trying to live to 200.
Yeah, but he's, like,
now, see, if he had to say 125, I'd have said, right, I'll give him that. But 200?
He spends, like, 8 hours of the day going through this, like, routine to de-age himself. So I'm like, mate, your whole purpose on your day is de-aging yourself. So how are you going to live in any ways? You may as well fucking die at, like, 88 or whatever the life expectancy is.
He spends $2 million per year on everything that he does. It's insane. And, like, as you say, like, you could walk outside and hit by a bus. Obviously, you're going to look, like, try to avoid the bus, but, like, here.
It can happen.
Things happen.
Yeah.
You know, things happen, knock down, whatever, or, like, a defect. So, yeah, I don't know. Has that answered fasting?
Is there health benefits to it?
I suggest try it.
Is there health benefits?
Yeah, but
mental clarity, apparently, like, it helps, like, with cognitive sort of function, so that if you're not eating food, it kind of makes sense. Like, an analogy there could use that, like, there's some people I've worked with who record food, eat food at, like, 10:30 at night, and then they're in bed 10:45.
Mm.
So, like, they're eating food, rolling into bed, and then they wake up at 7 a.m., and then they have breakfast 7:15. like, when are they giving their body a chance to, like, slow down, take time off? And, like, if a factory was 24 hours and you're constantly asking, so enzymes are little things that help process, like, the food, digestive system, help process it and then take it to wherever it's needed in the body. So if we use enzymes as factory workers and staff, if you're constantly working them through the clock, it can't be a good thing. So I think trial and error, give it a go. There is some literature that suggests, yeah, autophagy and all that can be a good thing. But for me and my goals of turning over lots of energy, not being irritated and feeling good, for me, that's more important than force myself to fast and do things that I don't want to do.
Yeah, I have to agree with you though on the fast. I was the exact same, irritable, just trying. Now, we didn't do, like, we were drinking electrolytes, water, and I actually had two Americanos as well that day. Sent me west after.
I'd say so.
I was like, I was getting the, like, you know, people say, oh, I got the jitters, but I felt like I was literally rattling.
It's horrible whenever that kicks in. You just feel like you can't control it.
Yeah.
Right, so the long-term fasting is probably not beneficial, as beneficial as what people are making out to be.
Here, very like, again, we'll go the opposite end of the spectrum. If somebody is 25 stone and the doctor says to him, you need to lose weight and you need to lose weight quickly, is fasting a good approach for him so that his body can start breaking down the body fat inside and use that as energy because he's fasting? I would say yes. So again, context. So a lot of these interviews and people in my position, they'll always say, well, it depends. And I don't want this to be that sort of chat, so I'll try and come from as many different angles as possible. For some people, fasting will be very, very good and beneficial. For others, it will be a nightmare. And I'm a wee bit conscious of that. They've given the gut a bit of a break where it's not constantly digesting food. So I try to stop eating food 9 p.m., 8:30, 9 p.m., knowing that I'll be in bed for 10 p.m., 10:15. So that it gives me better sleep, food's digested, the body doesn't have to try and fit that, it can focus on getting deeper quality sleep and falling into a deeper level of sleep that little bit quicker. And I feel better whenever I wake up the next day, having given that, like, 2 hour window from food to bed.
Yeah, that doesn't seem unreasonable though, no. Not eating after half eat.
Yeah.
But most people would, like, have a couple of snacks, even, like, if they have that dinner or they get a light chipper or something like that, let's say half eight, nine, half nine, they're probably taking a bar, a packet of crisps out of the press as well, and then after.
We packet of, like, biscuits, that. Cup of tea, yeah. Netflix, yeah. Mm-hmm. Before you know it, polishing off. So the point I was making there is that I will fast anyway in a day 13, 14 hours, and then I'll eat the other 11, 10, whatever those mavs.
Yeah, no, adds up.
12, 13. So there's an element of the fasting taking place, and I feel good for it. And I find that I found my sweet spot with that. I've tried extreme fasting. I've tried excessive eating to try and bulk through different phases of my life, and I just like where I'm at now, feel good for it. And that's what I encourage anybody listening to this, if they're thinking about it, to try it. It may be for you, it may not.
But the mental
clarity.
Yeah.
Yeah, the challenge.
So, like the challenge in itself, I think, do you know what I want to do? I probably won't know at the ocean and all that, but anyways, I wanted to do a 48-hour fast, yeah? Like, with just water or whatever, and no smoking as well. See, will that help me get off the smokes? But just not for any health benefits. I was wanting to do that for a mental challenge, like. I was thinking of doing that this week.
You should do it. You want to text me, and I'm going to, like, hold you accountable and give you some pointers and tips and what to do. Like, why not? And you may find that after 48 hours and you're back smoking again, that wasn't the way for you.
Yeah.
I just always encourage, when people ask me stuff, don't go into it just anticipating it's going to be the holy grail. Just be curious about things, try them. It may be for you, it may not be for you, and see what happens.
My problem with the fast is the last with the thought of doing that fast. So we have this idea in my head the last couple of weeks, but I've only started the gym a couple of weeks, or maybe 6 weeks ago. I've always done a bit of boxing, played a bit of football and like that, but I've never lifted weights. Just wasn't my thing. And a couple of weeks ago, I'm fucking hooked. I can't stop.
Yes, I saw your Instagram.
Yeah.
You're getting involved in it. Good.
So 5-6 days a week going to the gym now. And if I do that fast, it's probably not a good idea to lift weights, is it?
Again, try it. Yeah. You may find that you'll not be lifting what you lifted the previous session, but I'm sure you could do something as long as it doesn't, like, really increase your energy expenditure. So as long as you take your time with it, bit of mobility, bit of lighter stuff than what you would use to, and just listen to your body.
Yeah.
In terms of a tip to do it, it's just like, if you commit to it and say that, yeah, this is what I'm going to do, let your support network around you know what you're doing and why you're doing, so that they can support you, they can motivate you whenever the times that you need it. And it's only 48 hours.
Yeah.
Like, I was in Kenya earlier in the year and was training alongside this guy, had a wee gym on the beach, and we were talking about different ways of training, and I explained some of the workouts that I do. Like, I was on a cycle and burnt nearly 2,000 calories on Saturday, the extent of it. But I was telling him some of the workouts that I do, and his face, like, he couldn't get over it. So Kenya, it's like quite deprived and that, and he was like shocked, and he said, I couldn't do that. Like, that would cost me too much energy. He was talking about food like it was a currency.
Yeah.
Like, talk about a reality check. It's just like, here I am talking about this CrossFit workout and this thing. And, you know, you just don't realise it, how privileged and great Western society is for opportunity. You know, we're talking about our upbringing, and it wasn't as nice as other people and other parts of the city and opportunities and whatever else. But then we're like levels above what's going on with this guy.
Yeah.
Where, like, yeah, every meal is...
Yeah.
Yeah, it's not guaranteed, yeah.
Yeah.
Just traveling there. We've talked about a wide range of hours there for the window of fasting. Mm. So you've mentioned 11 to 12. You've mentioned 48. Probably consulted with your doctor before you go on this, that, like, you're thinking about doing something extreme like that.
Yeah, absolutely. Disclaimer, throw that in there. Yeah. Yeah, if you're going to think about anything, this isn't advice to go and take and run to the hills with it. Just like, you always like seek doctors or medical advice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Another one that we'd asked to discuss would be longevity, Tony, around nutrition. What advice would you give around that?
Yeah, so I gave a talk recently, and we're talking about lifespan. I think in Northern Ireland, the life expectancy is males 78, females 82. And the general cusp of it is, say, if you think about a spectrum, and there's 10 bars on it, I think, like, once it gets to the 7th bar, then it becomes disease on average. So, like, the final 30% on average, it was something like that anyway. This isn't, like, verbatim what I'm saying. It's just to illustrate the point that health span is about, it's not about trying to, like, live longer, but just trying to live disease-free and trying to live that better quality, like, in the days where... Like, I also remember whenever my dad was really ill and he couldn't tie his shoelaces, this man in his 40s, like a bricklayer, physically capable. And like that day sticks with me. I always think, like, I've torn this cruciate ligament twice, and like there's limitations I have to work around because of sporting injuries over the years. But regardless how sore or how many injuries I've had, I'll always work around it to try and maintain physical capability. So when it comes to longevity, it's all about trying to like boost health span. For me, I'm not trying to like talk about that guy saying 200 years of age, arbitrary number that doesn't really matter. I'm just trying to live life with as much energy, just to feel my best mentally, physically, emotionally, be in a, you know, a state where I can regulate stuff. You know, like when you go to the gym, and you've probably already experienced this because the adaptations happen at the earliest stages, that your self-esteem will increase, your confidence will be a wee bit better, you'll just feel that wee bit more capable because you're doing things that the vast majority of people don't do, and they still don't do. So, like, every time you go to the gym, you're casting a vote for becoming a person more capable. And that's what I like to hang on to. Like, is this moving the needle towards me feeling better? Then that's what I do. So, again, it's the non-sexy stuff. Hydration, prioritising sleep, lifting weights, try to work your heart rate, make sure you're working on your mobility. The older you get, the more you should prioritise that, and less so about the 1,000 burpee challenges and all stuff that puts you under a lot of pressure 20-year-olds are running about doing. Social connection, feeling... If you look at the blue zones, we'll talk about longevity. So blue zones are... It's like... I might butcher this. I haven't looked at it in years. But it's like places, like the top 10 places for longevity, where the average person like lives longest. And Japan, I have 4 or 5... Like they've quite a few places in, like, renowned for being a blue zone. And they put it down to a big thing about community and just, like social sort of being around people. So, like, you even see those, like, the interviews where there's Cubans and they're 110 and they're still smoking cigars and they're still having a whiskey or two every day. But they just seem so at peace with themselves. Like, so if you really heavily limit alcohol and smoking, that's going to help. Yeah, like if somebody smokes, somebody doesn't smoke, and somebody say, I'll give you a fiver free bet, which one's going to live longer, likely going to be the non-smoker. But yet, in preparation for this, I was like going through Google, seeing different things, and there's a lady who lived to 117, a French lady, and she smoked right up until the day she died. And there's like a famous quote with her saying, the only wrinkle that she has, she's sitting on it, you know, her butt crack. And yeah, it made me LOL as well. And like, it just goes to show you that, look, genetics. An old lecturer of mine had a great saying that genetics loads the gun, but lifestyle pulls the trigger.
Mm.
And yeah, like my dad died in his 40s, his dad died in his 40s, both cancer. You know, does that mean I'm susceptible to cancer in my 40s? Perhaps more so than a person whose parents lived to 80, 90 and so forth, grandparents. So I'll just try and do what I can to manage the stress and just stay on top of the things that I know that's given me the best chance. Is it going to be the antidote to not become a statistic? I don't know.
Mm.
But at least I'm doing something that I'm controlling what I can control. I'm big in the Stoic philosophy. I feel like it's helped me loads mentally, and you know that old daddy saying, is familiar with Stoic philosophy?
No.
Things like control what you can and cope with what you can't.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just controlling the controllables and I'm doing what I can to, you know, make me feel good. And if I'm having a McDonald's every day and I'm telling you about the stats of my dad and his dad, but I'm saying, yeah, I don't want to become a statistic, you'll think I'm full of shit.
Yeah.
Because I'm having McDonald's every day. So does that answer that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Definitely does.
You touched on there about saying you may be more susceptible to cancer. Another thing I asked about was disease, and is there a correlation with diet and disease? Because something I've seen before is that it's actually a fellow I know pulled me, and he was saying that his family, similar to what you were saying, suffer from Alzheimer's. Alzheimer's. So he's so conscious that his granddad had it, his dad has it, it's in his family. And he's getting to that age now as well. He's probably similar age to yourself, and he's really conscious of it. He has kids. So he's like, am I destined to put on my kids what I've gone through? So he's tried his best to eliminate sugar completely from his diet because he read somewhere that sugar can make you more susceptible to Alzheimer's. So is there tips and tricks in your diet that, from your perspective, you think can help limit disease?
So earlier I had like a 30-minute window to get some sort of workout in. I just wanted to blow off steam, like get something in, just so I come down with like a clear head. And I knew it was going to be intense. It was on a bike erg, and it was just going to be a minute on, minute off. So I didn't have time to get enough food on board. So 10 minutes before it, I had like a heaped tablespoon of honey. And it was probably like 35, 40 grams of honey, which is probably over 100 calories of sugar, just pure sugar. So if a diabetic had that, it wouldn't be good for their health. Like, it's going to exacerbate the issues and move that needle closer to like death. Whereas for me, it was for performance. So that there was sugar in the bloodstream. There was like readily available substrate. Sorry if I'm speaking shop here, but there was energy there to be turned over and help me get a little bit more out of that workout. So context does matter. There's no good or bad foods. I speak about this a lot, that again, context, that honey's arguably bad for a diabetic. It's good for me. So I try not to label things. I try to more just, let's break down what a diet is. Sorry, I'm stripping this back here, but we'll get to the root of it. So when you talk about nutrition, nutrition is the composition of what your diet is. Right, that's what makes up your diet. And if you break down the definition of a diet, it's the foods that we habitually eat. So our diet, it's not right or wrong, you know, to the extent it's just what it is right now. Now, if you were to come to me and say, here, I want to lose weight, and I'm looking at it and I'm seeing so much sugar, they're adding two sugars to their tea, and they're getting a frappuccino instead of just a regular coffee, and they get a milkshake instead of a bottle of water with their dinner. Sugar, technically, isn't the best option there. So you're probably like reading between what I'm saying here, that there's easier ways to cut the calories a little bit to help them lose weight and try and keep them, you know, on the straight and narrow. So we'll bring it back to Alzheimer's. And does sugar exacerbate? I don't know the answer to that. If it mentally helps him and the placebo effect kicks in where he feels much better about what he's doing and his new diet approach is sustainable and doesn't put him under pressure and he's getting enough food on board and he's feeling good and he has the energy to be a good dad, to be a good work colleague, businessman, whatever it may be, good husband, then crack on.
Mm.
However, for someone like me, that honey meant I got a wee bit more of the workout and I felt good.
So everything, well, not everything, but from what I'm listening from you, Tony, is like everything is on an individual basis.
Absolutely.
Is what you're saying.
Yeah.
There's no like, there can be groups of people who this method can work for, but there's another method that would be disastrous for. So you need to look at your own diet and see what works and what doesn't work. Obviously, you're not saying McDonald's will work for this crew and not for this crew. No, yeah. That's fucking shit filled. But what you're saying.
However, sorry for interjecting, but like there's so many like eating disorders through poor personal training or poor Weight Watchers, Slimming World coaches, or even just kids who played sport. The evidence suggests females in particular, were their coach, if they did gymnastics or if they played sport, if they were carrying body fat, it made them less capable to perform at a standard they could do. You know, they will shame them. So then, you know, they'll carry that stigma with them mentally. So back to McDonald's, if friends all go out on a Friday lunchtime and there's just one person who goes to the gym four times per week and they eat their salad, chicken salad, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday, and they enjoy that and they feel good. But on that Friday, they go out and they socialise with the friends in the office and they have the McDonald's and they have the crack and they're laughing out loud and they're, you know, that social engagement. There's loads of benefit that comes of that too. So this is what I say about there's no good and bad food. There may be a more efficient way to eat food to reach your goals, and there's an inefficient way. And if you're telling me you're someone who wants to lose weight but you're having McDonald's every day for lunch, that's certainly an inefficient way because it's calorific. It's going to make you feel likely crap afterwards. And if someone's eating McDonald's every day, they're less likely to be going to the gym, they're less likely to be going for the walk, they're less likely to be prioritizing water, it's likely more Coca-Cola. It's all those things. You know, we talked about studies and cherry picking. There was one doing the rounds there about how cardio exercise doesn't help you lose weight. And the conclusion from the research paper was correct, but the research paper didn't control calories. So they got two groups. One didn't do cardio, the other one did do cardio. And the consensus was that they more or less stayed the same from where they were at the start of the group. You know, but I have no doubt if there was calories controlled and they ate relative to being in a calorie deficit, which would help them burn energy and lose body fat, then the outcome would have been different.
Mm.
So it's all about identifying where you're at, where you want to get to, and make the most sustainable changes.
Mm.
Here's actually an interesting story. Whenever we opened up our restaurant, we had like a, so it was like a healthy take on food, and we called it like a McMuffin's the
breakfast, yeah.
McDonald's one, isn't it? We called it an O-Muffin or something like that. And there was a guy, we opened it up in a wealthy part of Belfast, Lisburn Road, quite affluent. And this guy who walks past, lives nearby, has a lot of McDonald's, a lot of McDonald's chains. And he knew someone who knew us and he passed on the message saying, tell them to change their menu because of the crossover to McMuffin and McDonald's and all of that. And like here we were, like, we hadn't a clue what we were doing. Day one, opening up a restaurant, stressed to the absolute hilt. I was on YouTube at 4 a.m, how to froth milk. I was the barista, like crazy, 3 hours before day one of trading. And then you get that news. Really?
Half a day off. Like, Tony, is there any little nutritional hacks that you could recommend to somebody? Something that, like, people might be shocked to know, or like just something simple to implement into their day-to-day?
I actually don't like the term hacks because it makes it feel like it's, how do I word this? It's like it's a shortcut to trying to get ahead whenever I'm talking about the non-sexy, unsexy stuff. But I think protein is underrated. I don't think we, as a society, we don't eat enough protein. And if you can, try and include protein source in your first meal of the day. Because as you sleep, your body starts, like, you can't have, you're not eating food, so things start to, like, break down a little bit. Talked about catabolism, where the body breaks down a little bit. So, like, you want to keep muscle mass. So if you can't have protein involved in the first meal of the day, so if you're on the go, it could be a protein shake, it could be eggs and toast, it could be oats with a scoop of protein into it. So as long as you can get protein on board first meal of the day, that's quite important.
Is there a best time to eat after waking up? Because I'm terrible. Like, probably one day a week or 2 days a week, I'll eat before 12, 1 o'clock in the afternoon. I usually eat first meal of the day, 2, 3 o'clock. Even if I'm up, doesn't matter if I'm up from 7 a.m. or 11 a.m., doesn't matter.
Do you feel good for that?
Yeah.
then keep doing that. Keep
now, sometimes you'll forget.
You feel good.
Sometimes you'll forget to even eat at the 2-3 and I'll come in here at fucking half wave and I'll be all over the captain. I'm not forgetting to fucking eat, but yeah, no. My regular time would be 1, 2, 3 o'clock and that's just what works like.
And what time do you wake up?
Again, mix and match.
Okay.
Usually before 10 a.m.
10 a.m.?
Before, so. Or so I could wake up at 8 tomorrow morning and the following.
The day's over.
Yeah, I could wake up at 8 tomorrow morning and then fucking Wednesday morning wake up at 11. I'm just mix and match. I try and get up before 9, 10 every morning.
It's a hard one to answer. Like, it all comes down to, sorry, I'm not giving you these, like, bang for your buck answers so that people can run with it, but it all depends on what works for you.
Yeah.
Like, if someone has young children and they're a busy professional and they're trying to get the kids ready for school and they don't have time to eat something of nutritional value, is it probably best that they wait until they get to the office and they delay it for a little bit? Probably.
Yeah.
Rather than just eating what they can, croissant or whatever's there in handy and calorific in the way they go. So it all depends. I'm sorry on that. I don't want to be that person.
Do you know what? I actually enjoy it though because you're very on the nose with it though. You're very like, again, like even the word hacks, you don't like it. You don't like this whole vision of a shortcut. You're like, actually just take the longer route, the non-sexy route.
I just want people to make it a lifestyle. Mm. And what exactly that lifestyle change looks like, it's up to them. You know, we compare ourselves to too many other people who are a lot fitter or have been going to the gym for a lot longer or have been like working on their health and well-being for like a much greater, you know, period of time. Just like identify where you're at and think, like, what's the one thing I can do to make myself feel better, to give me a good chance to like get more out of this day than what I have been getting? Is that more water? You know, it's, people go off and ask, how much water should I drink in a day? Well, again, that depends on who you are. A rough rule of thumb is 0.05 multiplied by your weight in kilograms. So for me, that's around 4 litres, roughly, like rough speaking. But like everyone is different and everyone will process water differently. People will eat more foods cooked in water, which means there's a way of bringing water on board. So just check your pee. If you can look at your pee and see that it's yellow, then there's mild dehydration going on. If it's closer to brown, you're dehydrated. Drink water.
I feel like the only way to get, if it's clear, you're hydrated, isn't it?
Yeah, like you should always strive for like a faint yellow. If it's clear, then you're, can't even remember what that's called.
Like, but I feel like the only way I ever get to that is when I'm proper bursting after drinking loads of water. And as in like uncomfortable, I wouldn't just be like casually going to the toilet and be like, oh, it's clear. I'd be like, so we took a toilet break just there. Mine was clear, but that's because I'm at the drinking loads of water and I drank water before we got here. So I know I'm on the go waiting to pee. Yeah. Whereas if I go home and I chill out in the house, it'd be more yellow, as you said, because I haven't drank water as regular. No, that's a bit vulgar and all. Yeah, maybe TMI was sure we are.
That's okay. You're conscious of it. And that's like a big first step. Like you're aware of hydration status and drinking water as frequently as you can and like just being aware of that. And I think that's, how do I put this thought into words? It's like everybody tries to change everything at once and then they give up after 10 days because it's not sustainable. They start their diet. They go to the gym 5 times per week. They try and drink 3 litres of water. They're going to eat chicken, broccoli and rice every single meal. It's not sustainable. You know, nobody lives like a monk. And then once life stressors get in the way, it's like, fuck a diet. You know, let's go to Burger King. You know, and like, and then before you know it, oh, I can't do this. The next day you're having another Burger King or a kebab or Chinese, whatever. And then you just get back into that way of thinking. So if there's anyone who can kind of resonate with the yo-yo sort of approach to the nutritional aspect of trying to improve their nutrition status, it's just pick one thing. Is it what I'm saying about protein? Trying to have protein with most meals, if not every meal, a protein source, where it be meat, eggs, fish. Some yogurts have good levels of protein in it. Protein is very underrated. And the reason being is that the more muscle mass, the more tissue that we have, excuse me, the likelihood the longer we're going to live, the more capable we're going to be. We're going to offset sarcopenia. Sarcopenia is like, it's actually recently just been classified as like an actual thing where your muscle mass wastes away so much that your bones start to break and you're more susceptible to falls and just your quality of life just heavily diminishes very, very quickly. So the more muscle mass you can get as you move into those later stages in life, the more capable you're going to be for life. So have protein with most meals.
You see the way you give the number there, the 0.05 multiplied by your weight in kilo.
Your body weight in kilograms.
Yeah, for water. Isn't that like a formula like that for protein intake?
Yeah. Like, I'm seeing people now touting 2 grams per kilogram of body weight, but will people benefit more from that number than 1.2? Likely. But the thing about protein is it's expensive. It's the most expensive component of a meal. And whenever you talk about eating healthily and like healthy foods are expensive, if you're eating the 2 grams per kilogram of body weight in protein, then the argument is that it is expensive. So 1.2 to 1.6, if you can get there nearly every day, you're on to a winner. Myself personally, because I take it that bit more serious than the average person, I would eat more than that. I'd probably eat around 1.8. Because recently I've been tracking calories. You know, we talk about myths and like it's frowned upon, like tracking calories, and I try not to term it like that. Instead of saying tracking calories, like it's a bad thing and the demonization that comes with it, I like to say, like, I'm just checking my energy balance, or I'm measuring my energy balance, because I'm going out on cycles and I'm burning 2,000 calories. If I'm not aware of how much energy is coming back on board to help replenish and refuel, I'm going to be cranky, I'm going to be a zombie, I'm going to have no energy for work, etc. So right now, with the way I'm training and what I'm doing, I feel really good for doing it. And when you track your energy balance, it's educational. It helps people understand the composition of food, like what's really high in calories, what's medium calories, what's low calories, what's high in protein, what's like nutrient dense, what's bringing you lots of vitamins and minerals in. And if anyone here is listening to this, well, not here in the studio, because it's just us, like shooting the breeze, but if anyone's listening to this and they're thinking about, oh yeah, I might start tracking calories or understanding the energy density of foods, I'm a big fan of it. The problem is that there's so many people out there who has, like, they've just made it, they've given people plans, PDF cookie cutter plans, that's not sustainable, and they've just brought like a really negative connotation with around it. But we all check our bank balance, you know. We go to work, we make money, we have rent to pay, we have mortgage to pay, we have phone bills to pay. We reconcile that stuff. So why not our energy balance? Mm-hmm. Not all the time, but if you're like serious about your health and well-being, tap into it every now and again. So it gives you the feedback, because we are creatures of habit. And we eat, I think there's a study that showed that 90% of the time we eat the same 22 foods. So we are creatures of habit, and we'll always default, because life is busy, we'll default into the foods that we are eating. So you could be tracking your energy and you could see those same 20 odd foods and think, I'm really devoid in that and that and that. And if I have no B vitamins, my nails are really bad or my skin's really bad. And that can just help give that feedback. Maybe I'll get a multivitamin or maybe get a B vitamin. If I can't get foods on board that helps like fill that void. Does that make, have I butchered that?
No, that makes perfect.
I get where you're coming from, yeah.
Just about the price of protein, boys, the price of fucking healthy food is a joke. I swear to God, I only had this conversation the other day, Tony, yeah. I was saying, I wonder, obesity rates are through the fucking roof.
Isn't that, there was like a study and there was shows about it as well. So we were talking about growing up in the areas we grew up in. Like, it's cheaper to get a fucking meal deal and a chipper than it is to shop healthy. And that's why, like, obesity is rising, and 100%. In schools as well.
Look at a punnet of grapes. Go into the shop and look at grapes, boys. It's a fiver for grapes.
It's €7 on the side of the road in Wexford. And that's from the source.
Like, it's ridiculous, boys, no?
Yeah.
Like, you can get a whole meal.
Yeah, yeah.
In Burger King. For that price, you know
this,
I mean?
This was kind of the little agenda I had there when I was asking about like little hacks. So like if someone's like, geez, I'm not getting enough protein or it's too expensive, if there's any like substitute, like, oh, have you threw this in, blah, blah, blah.
I'm a big fan of protein powder. Like, I don't even consider protein powder a supplement. But I have a protein shake every day. Mm. I have creatine with it, you know, just to lean back into Alzheimer's and your friend. Like, there's some great studies coming through to show the benefits of taking creatine for cognitive function to help offset the risk of neurological diseases, like dementia and Alzheimer's and Parkinson's and other things. So that's, I'm glad I'm bringing this up. But yeah, I'll have a daily shake and it will be creatine. Sometimes I mix it in with porridge. Sometimes I mix it in with cereal. Sometimes I mix it in with yogurt. It's a part of my daily staple. And that is cost effective. Like, you're 25, 30 grams of protein through, what's that going to be, a quid? What's a tub of protein? 40 quid for 40 servings, give or take. So yeah, that's an opportunity to try and hack the price down from it.
Yeah, so like, I think people are under this misconception that like, unless you're going to the gym every day, that's the only way you take supplements. But like you're saying, you could take in your day-to-day life a scoop of protein powder and in your breakfast in the morning. That's not someone who's training 4 to 5 days a week. That could be just living your day-to-day life.
Yeah, no, for sure. Like, so supplements by definition should really only be sourced if you can't get them from whole foods.
Yeah.
So creatine, now that we're on this topic, and it's quite a common question, supplements I would recommend: creatine, omega-3 fatty acids, so omega-3 fish oils, and vitamin D3. Now, it's decent day outside today, so a day like today, you wouldn't have to take it, but being in the Northern Hemisphere in Ireland, you know, it's a lot more grey days than is sunny, so I'd recommend those three.
Yeah. Another one I have there is the role of exercise versus nutrition. So, you know the old saying, you can't out-train a bad diet.
But here's the thing, consistently exercising,
I disagree with that.
If you're consistently exercising, there's a very good chance your diet's going to be better than the state it was in before you consistently exercised. They all stack up to cast a vote to becoming a healthier person. Whenever you're constantly exercising, your head's in a better frame of mind. You can manage stress better, you're better to be around, you're more optimistic on things. And whenever you're in that frame of mind, your food choices are better. You're less reactive, you're more on the ball, you're prepping stuff a little bit more, you're more inspired to eat better food. And it all just comes around. And if you can make that habitual and a daily habit, yes, you're in your 20s, okay? So you've got time on your side, but there's going to be a time where you will not be quick to turn to Calvin and say you disagree with, you can't outrun a bad diet. Now, yes, on Saturday, BMR, how much calories I'll burn just being who I am. So my watch tells me how many calories that is, plus the 2,000 calories from the cycle. I'm probably in a need for nearly 5,000 calories for that day. Can I go and have that kebab? Absolutely. You know, and am I going to wake up next day pretty lean? Yeah, absolutely. But not everybody goes out for 2,000 calorie cycle, and whenever it comes to that, this is me. I can talk about this because I'm tracking the energy balance.
Yeah.
Whereas someone who is like going to the gym 3, 4, 5 times per week and they don't track that, well, it's going to be very difficult for them to eat crap food and be in control of the other aspects of what they want to achieve out of going to the gym.
So I was only going to talk about my own experience.
Okay.
So I ran a marathon in November 21 or 22, Calvin? 21. And I was living on my own for about 6 months, 7 months at that stage, yeah? And never turned a kilogram on. So I ate a chipper 5, 6 nights a week, every single week, bar none. Terrible foods all the time. And on the training for that marathon, and the marathon itself, that's the best shape that I've ever been in my life, because it was on a structured plan for running every day. So it was like your short distance run, then your long distance run, your rest day, and so on and so forth. That's the best shape that I've ever been in, and that's the fittest I've ever been, eating the worst that I've ever eaten. So that's where my initial reaction of you can't outwork a bad diet from my own experience comes from. Like, when I look back on pictures of myself, I'm like, Jesus Christ, like, I was like, that's the first time in my life I was ever bleeding shredded. And my performance during the marathon was pretty good.
Can I ask you a question here then? Do you think hindsight now, if you didn't eat a chippy every day, you would have performed better, you would have recovered better, you would have felt better during the run?
Yeah. Right, you got me there, didn't you?
And if
I didn't light a smoke at 28K.
And there's a second part to this question. Is training for a marathon a regular, everyday fitness activity?
No.
No, your energy expenditure would be much, much greater than the average person. So, like, did you see, the guy actually died recently. He did the, what did he eat? He had like one of those, it was something like Burger King. He had one of them every day just to prove that the whole energy balance and keeping it in check, that as long as you're in a calorie deficit, regardless of the foods that you eat, you will lose weight.
It's a man, the supersize me, Philip. I'm nearly sure he did it for 30 days, and the thing was, he went in and he ordered something different off the menu, and if they said, do you want that supersized, he couldn't say no.
Morgan Spurlock, directed sopa, so is me.
But didn't he get a health check after as well? So I'm nearly sure his cholesterol was fucking and his bloods came back. There was red alerts everywhere.
Yeah, things were under pressure.
So I would imagine yours probably was at the time as well, Terry.
Yeah.
Mentally, what he was saying there about, like, you're less reactive, you're more likely to be calm and composed. That time period, that adds up with what he's saying. You were a bit more...
1,000,000%.
You were a lot more volatile.
1,000,000%.
Whereas now... I've noticed a big change in him in the last 10 months as well since he started the gym. You are a lot more calm and collective.
Yeah.
And I'd imagine the lifestyle does tie in with your diet as well. You definitely have been on a better diet.
My diet is great now, I think.
Yeah.
I have one at Hill.
Like, he's definitely...
but compared...
like any normal person would, but he's definitely like on the upward.
Cheap meals.
Cheap meals, you hate that term.
Look, food is food. I don't hate it. It just makes it hard to, like, fathom. Do I have to eat really clean, quote-unquote? You know, real boring, dry food. And then come the weekend, it's Geronimo. And it's unnecessary. It doesn't need to be the way. Like, all food has their place in the healthiest of lifestyle. And sometimes going out with your friends over a pizza and a bottle of wine is the healthiest thing you can do that week, because it helps, gives you a break from the kids, gives you a break from stress and work and other factors, maybe a sick parent or something. It just helps you, just brings into a trance for those 90 minutes, 2 hours of just switching off and having a crack with your friends. So, like, all food has its place in the healthiest of lifestyles.
Just to be clear, I'm not even, like, on a diet or anything like that. I'm just naturally eating things that are decent for you, where it's not a fucking chip off 5-6 nights a week. You know what I mean? So... I'm not aiming for that. I'm not trying to gain weight, lose weight. I'm not trying to get bigger or smaller. I'm literally just going to the gym for the old head and eating the bit better. But that seems to be coming naturally with it, where I don't mind prepping a bit of food now.
Cooking, yeah.
I really like this quote, and it's kind of like, it strips back to what you're saying, just being in that moment. And it's like, every meal is a short-term investment in how you feel and perform, a mid-term investment in how you look, and a long-term investment in your freedom from disease. And... like, going out for cheap meals and whatever else, that's involved in that too. You just always have to bring it back to, what do you want to get out of it? Because there'll be people listening to this who had a pint today at lunchtime, and they're just, like, listening in just to try and fucking have the crack, and you're...
came to the wrong podcast.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. Pause. Sorry about that. Fuck McDonald's. And, you know, but there will be people listening to this and think, right, okay, I kind of get where they're coming from. There's no one-stop shop for everybody. It's about... context matters, the individual person, where am I at, what's the one thing that I can do, where do I want to be? Okay, if I can do that one thing, is it going to help me get closer to where I want to be? Yes, it does. Is it sustainable? Is it budget friendly? We're going to talk about high protein. Yes, I can see myself doing this in 6 months' time. Right, let's do it. Because, like, when it comes to fat loss, like, a lot of people will yo-yo that because they'll go on extreme cuts and they'll cut their calories way down, and after 4 or 5 days, like, motivation and willpower only will bring you so far. After the fifth day, you want to stab a puppy. We're talking about irritability. Like, you're so cranky and wound up and you're no use for anybody. So see the best fat loss diet. It's the one where you can eat the most amount of calories but still be happy with your rate of loss, because your rate of loss, you need to be happy with that, because that keeps you motivated and that keeps you doing what you're doing and trying to make these positive changes. Because if you're not losing body fat, but yet that's the goal, then you're going to get wound up and think, what's the point? So rather than thinking, here, let's be really extreme about it and do this in 6 weeks, 8 weeks, we talked about 12-week shred plans, like, long-term sustainable change. And if that 12-week plan is a Kickstarter, where it's realistic, it doesn't mean that you're training 10 times per week and you're on 800 calories plus 5 grams of dust, then, like, get after it. But if it's a sustainable approach to think, right, we're going to do this for 12 weeks, okay? You want to lose weight, good chance you're going to lose somewhere between 1.5 and 2 stone. You're going to feel fitter. You're going to be able to manage stress better. You're going to sleep better. You're going to be able to move better. And it's going to be a really good introduction to the gym. You're going to understand how to move, how to squat, how to press, how to row. Let's sign up for that rather than thinking, can I lose 4 stone in 3 months?
Yeah.
And you still see personal trainers, like, putting it out there, like the extreme diets or female photo shoots. Like, you're causing more issues than what it's worth. The females are losing their periods. You're creating eating disorders. You know, they diet down, really extreme bodybuilder style. They get the photo shoot that day. The personal trainer's really happy. They've got their marketing piece for Instagram. But then what about the support afterwards?
Mm-hmm.
What about the reverse dieting? What about bringing them back up into the maintenance calories? A lot of personal trainers don't understand that aspect to it. And it's a burden. It defeats the purpose. You're creating longer lasting, bigger issues than what existed before. I can speak from experience. Like, I'm not trying to get on a high horse and say, like, I'm the best at what I do. I've made the mistakes before. Where I remember a friend who's now a friend of mine, a lady sought me out and she really wanted to lose weight. She lost like 7 stone in total. She lost like a 5 stone, 5.5 stone herself. With all her personal trainers, whatever, she found out I'm not fat loss guy. So she got in touch. Okay, so we worked together and I succumbed to it. I kind of taught her how to manipulate energy balance. So you are where you are. You track your movement. You track how much you're eating. And then you manipulate accordingly. So you're losing, great, losing, great, losing, great. Then plateau for a few weeks. Right, okay, let's manipulate it. Either up your energy or decrease the calories. And then just rinse and repeat, rinse and repeat. And I taught her this. And then it got to a stage where she actually like lost her period for a long time. And then when it came to starting a family, 4 bouts of IVF. And she probably doesn't really know this. We did an Instagram live over lockdown. I was trying to do things just to keep people entertained. And I don't think I got this message across to her loudly enough, but I felt really bad for that. And I felt part of the issue. So since then, that's why I would be quick to like ridicule, or not even ridicule. That's not what I do. I would try and reach out to people and say, look, see what you're advertising there, that 6 week, lose up to 20 pounds in 6 weeks. Like, try not to do that. What about like coming from the angle of teaching them how to like get involved in a gym, trying to break down that barrier? Because likely people who sign up to these plans are people who are looking for the drastic change and they haven't been in a gym in years, or they've never been. Like, just be that barrier of entry, like low it down where it's so low that they feel really good come the end of it. Like, you've taken them by the hand and they bring it into it. So to circle back to like Kickstarter plans, and we talked about like the points to follow into that, they really could have their place if they were done slightly differently and a bit more maturity and a bit more like longer term focus on it.
Mm. I've seen a few people I've talked about during the before and after pictures, because even then, like when I used to look at them years ago, I'd be like, Jesus, like fair play to him. I wish I could do that. You know, 6 weeks, he's shredded now. But now I'm more conscious of it from someone who goes to the gym, and I see people do it and I'm like, you look great. You look great for a couple of hours. That's not sustainable. You're dehydrated the fuck. You're going to balloon back up now next week. And that PT has got his before and after picture for Instagram, probably a few hundred quid off you as well. And he just rides off into the sunset. Now you are all that damage, all that suffering that you've went through, because you're in a calorie deficit. You're training like a motherfucker. You are parching your body as well. You're water loading as well, which is something my fucking athletes do to cut weight. You're doing it as your normal day to day. You probably have a 9-to-5 job on top of that. And now next week, that's all forgotten about. And you're back probably feeling shit. You're probably in a worse condition you are than when you started. But now I'm more conscious of that, and I look at it and I'll be like, oh, don't do them things. Because as I said, yeah, it's just not sustainable.
It gets sold as this appealing thing though.
Yeah, of course. Everyone wants to look great. Like everyone wants to look great, no matter what.
But this is what you're getting at, Tony, is you can look great and eat certain foods, but there's longevity to it, like just trying to go and enjoy it, the long process.
Like, I get it. Like nowadays, it's so difficult to get our attention. Everybody's out. That's why people say stupid stuff to try and sell a book, trying to sensationalise a health hack so that people think, oh, that's what I'm going to do. That's going to be an easy way, like a much quicker pathway. You know, anything that says fast when it comes to fat loss or super quick, like just go the opposite direction. Whatever they say to do, try and do something differently. Because there's no fast way about it. It takes time. So, like, back to, like, the photo shoot. I get that. Like, it's, you've got, like, 2-3 seconds attention span, whatever it is, and you're scrolling through and you see a before and after. You're trying to make as big an impression as possible to sell your product or services. I just think that in 2024, we just need more people talking more about, why not just make it a lifestyle? You don't need the before and after photo. Because, as you mentioned there, Calvin, it distorts what health is, because once they rebound and they get water on board and then they eat food and start to feel bloated, and then because they trained excessively twice per day and they build up to the shoot and then they haven't been in the gym in 10 days and then they step back on the scales and they've put a stone 16, 18 pounds back on, they think, what's the point?
Mm.
So not only have they put themselves through all of that and they've spent 300, 400, 500 quid, some people 1,000 euros on that, it's like, well, what was the point?
Yeah.
You've just distorted your way of becoming a healthier person.
And you've probably torn someone off the gym as well. someone probably won't, when they hear gym, they'll be like, fuck, I went through all that torture. The last time I was in a gym, I'm not going back there now again. Mm. It doesn't have to be that way.
See, it's an interesting one. Like, for some males, it could be the catalyst for them to completely change their life. Also some females too, but there's a lot more risk that comes with females.
Yeah.
And there's not enough coaches out there at first in understanding female metabolic health, as in, like, the risk of losing the menstrual cycle when the body fat gets so low. And just, this is statistics, this isn't me being sexist, but there's, like, more issues in, like, females in terms of, like, body image and body dysmorphia and the things that come around with that, like, with the rebound of, right, we've done the photo shoot, and then it's just so messy. And I've seen it so many times, and I used to be that personal trainer on Instagram that used to get lots of DMs, people giving off about, like, how low-calorie diets are being given out and whatever else. And, yeah, I think we're slowly getting there, but it just needs to be more. I would look at it a more accelerated rate, more realistic approach to becoming healthier, fitter, more capable.
Do you think the governments can do more about that? Obviously, you're from up the north, but I've seen something a couple of weeks ago that there was a proposal put forward down here that the government should make a tax deductible. Like, you get a tax break if you join a gym, so you can take a gym membership out from your taxes. To encourage more people to join a gym.
That's cool. Yeah, I haven't heard of anything like that.
It's something they're trying to implement down here, but now it's a long way away.
They're thinking like that, then great. You know, like, get the grassroots of it. Like, puts the health system under pressure, whether it be physical through diabetes and obesity and the increased risk of cancers developing, to other things, mental side of things, maybe even like neurological diseases and other things that, yeah, come from a grassroots level. Like, try and, like, get into healthier habits and encourage more activity and more movement. You know, I rip the balls out of saying this, but movement is medicine. And both for the head, both for the body, just for everything. So, yeah, I really like that idea. And it'd be great if more people, more countries do that. Probably lots of countries already do it, and we're just a wee bit, like,
behind.
Yeah.
Wouldn't be like us. I think we're coming to the end. Yeah. Are you, anything else there you want to plug in?
Only if you want, do you want to plug?
For?
Trying to win a business, a fucking,
you know, coming up.
Do you know what? I don't have anything to sell online. Yeah. We're developing an app at the moment. So, like, everything I talked about earlier in the corporate wellness, about the team that we've got, the people who've got involved in it, we're trying to put it all together onto an app so that you could click into it and you think, right, okay, I've only 20 minutes at home. I'm going to do this on-demand workout, press start, and the timer's on the screen, the count's right down to zero, and it takes you through it. Or if you go to the gym, there's a plan. Or if your head's in a bit of a pickle, then here's a four-week strategy with a psychologist where it's only 90 seconds per day. Will it be, here's an activity I want you to do, or here, I want you to write down three things, gratitude, whatever it may be. I'm just, like, hypothetically firing things out here. So that's what's exciting for us for the rest of this year. I want to put all the smart people that we've got with us, what they know inside their head, onto a platform to make it as accessible as possible.
Brilliant.
Class. All right. You happy there, Terry?
Yep.
Right. Take us out there, Alan.
Boom.
Subscribe to this podcast for free on the Go Loud app. What you waiting for? Put your back in it. Just a little more. Throw your weight in it now. Fill your body up. Walk it hard and slow. When you feel it, that's the hypnotic.